Anything else as well?
I'll leave on a pessimistic note, because we mentioned, you know, the Rishonim say, Chazal say, that the person's intellectual abilities are limited. And a person that thinks that he can overcome his intellectual shortcomings is making a mistake, because it's matas elokimi. So there's a certain intrinsic limitation that a person has. That's something which makes a person feel depressed. The person feels that they're intrinsically limited, and that takes away the motivation from a person to advance. The person says, look, my mind is limited, and that's it. I'm never going to reach beyond a certain point. But what should a person's goal be? A person's goal has to be to improve himself. But this takes away a certain fire, a certain zeal that ordinarily a person would have. If he thinks, I mean, basically, it's in today's society. The whole idea is that a person can do anything. And it's not just in this society, but I mean, I've heard it in Moshe Schmuzen and talks from people who are very frum and know how to learn, and they're very attracted to that idea. And they always quote Midrash, and they show you see what this person did, and anybody could do it. And it's this kind of a fantasy is something which attracts a person. It's a very attractive force in this society. The person can do anything, and it's something which leads to the greatest unhappiness, because the person is constantly finds himself in a being rebutted, is that what I mean? By society, by reality. Okay. But what should a person's goal be? See, a person's goal, the truth of the matter is that if a person's goal is the appreciation of Chachma, then the person's goal is a realistic one. And it is one which, in truth, doesn't. The fact that the person has intellectual limitations doesn't really affect to that great degree. It's amazing, but it doesn't really affect to a very great degree the person's ability to appreciate Chachma. I mean, if a person trains his mind through Torah, he's capable. He might not be able to be machadish the ideas that Reb Chaim was able to do, but amazingly, he can understand it. Amazingly, he can understand it. He can understand Reb Chaim. So a person should be very comfortable and satisfied with the idea that he has the ability to understand the Chachmas Hashem. So he wasn't able to break open the sigil himself and come up with ingenious, enlightened thoughts of Reb Chaim. But if he can understand it, a person should be very satisfied with the fact that his chelik of Torah is such that he's able to comprehend it and to understand it. This should be a very satisfying idea. It's only because a person is rooted in the world of the comparative that a person's enjoyment of Torah is diminished. As long as he's involved in comparing himself with others, then of course his whole enjoyment of Torah will be destroyed. But if a person would look at it objectively, he would be extremely happy. Even though he can't be a Chaim Brisker, he can't be a Rav, but the fact is he can understand the ideas of these great people. So that's an amazing thing, that that plain person that trains himself properly can understand every idea, but they can understand a good amount of Chachmas Hashem. It's an amazing phenomenon. So a person's goal really should be to be able to partake of the satisfaction and the enjoyment of understanding ideas. And that's something which every person can do. Which is dependent really upon one thing. It's dependent upon one thing. It's dependent upon his the work that he does. in perfecting his mind, in the training that he submits himself to, in perfecting his mind in terms of method, methodology, and understanding. If a person does that, he can appreciate the chokhmah of great gedolim. And the fact that we can learn a Tosfos, that we can appreciate a Ramban, so we wouldn't have thought of the Ramban. Okay, I mean, the Ramban ties in ingeniously Gezel and Yiddish, who shows how the things all work out, is unbelievable. But a person can be very happy that he can understand the idea, that he can appreciate the idea. And that a person can do, that any person can do, if he submits to the proper training. I mean, that should be the goal, and that should give a person the chiyus and the happiness that he's capable of doing that. Who is the originator? So he might not be able to be the originator of the idea. But in terms of the appreciation of the idea, what difference does it make? So he couldn't originate the idea. If he has the ability to appreciate the idea, he should be malei simcha. It means he can appreciate the idea of the greatest minds. And okay, so it's true, there are certain abstract ideas he might not be able to follow, but he has plenty of chachma that he could partake of in his lifetime. He's partaking of the ultimate Chachmas Hashem. So that's really what the motivation of the person in the yeshiva should really be. That's the true motivation. And the truth of the matter is, that the Rav one time said that he says some people, he's talking about people in the yeshiva that are upset with the yeshiva many times because they didn't gain enough learning. He said that it says gaining and learning is dependent upon a person's abilities, his kelim, and it's dependent upon his rutzen. And he says that the main thing is not his abilities, but really the rutzen. That's what it relates to. It's true. Rutzen is the main thing. Person's desire. A person has a desire, so then he'll be able to perfect his mind and be able to appreciate the Chachmah. And the truth of the matter is that the small differences that you find among Chaverim, even one is sharper, one is less sharp, but in terms of appreciation of Chachmah and learning together, I mean, first of all, there's no mind, no matter how sharp, it doesn't overlook points in a Chavrusa, okay? On the whole, maybe one person is sharper, but the fact is that each person has an individual mind, and one will always see points that the other one doesn't see. So maybe the sum total of the contribution will be greater on one side. In terms of a person contributing to the ideas of Torah, in terms of learning the Harusa, there's no question about it that anybody could partake of that. The person shouldn't look in terms of the relative, they should look in terms of the absolute, and the ability to appreciate, partake of Chachmas Hashem. That should be the prime motivation, because that's where perfection lies. And that doesn't make much difference, really, in terms of, it doesn't make much difference in that sphere, whether a person is endowed with great gifts or mediocre gifts. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. That should really be the goal of a person in yeshiva, a realistic goal. It's an opportunity in life. You have to look at life on the whole. If you do not take advantage of that opportunity, it means you're going to miss out in your entire life the ability to partake of Chachmas Hashem. I mean, that's what it is. It shouldn't be motivated by false motivation. It should be motivated by true motivation. And that enjoyment and that appreciation is the very essence of life, the very essence of a person's enjoyment in this world. Okay. Yeah. With memories from Chazal, you have to be very careful, because a lot of times a memra, it gives a certain implication, but the question is the implication the one that we project on the memra, or the implication is the one that's stemming from the memra? Now, Mosa Yagia Maisai La Maisai Vosai, you can take in two ways. The person can take it to me, that he wants to, he's always unhappy because he's never as great as his others. And so that would mean that a person is doomed to eternal unhappiness, because he's never going to get there, and he's always going to be miserable. Okay? But Mosa Yagia Maisai La Maisai Vosai, it's interpreted properly, what it means is that a person, on the contrary, a person should always have before him the models of perfection, even though he can never reach that goal. But it shouldn't disturb him. He should be able to look at the perfection of the previous generations and appreciate it, and always strive to partake of that, but not because he's in competition with it, with Villarosa. The competitive factor that the person projects onto the scene, which destroys his whole partaking of this, of the area properly, destroys the whole perspective. It's not a competitive idea. It means that the person should always have the model of the ultimate perfection in front of his mind's eye. And because of that, a person will naturally always try to partake of that perfection, but not because he's in competition with the in competition, that's already means that he's, that means the person is striving for one thing. He's striving for the point where he can pat himself on the back and say, I made it. See? There's no such phenomenon. That's a phenomenon which is a value in this society. It's not a phenomenon which is a realistic value. It's a phenomenon which destroys the person. It's a harmful influence. It's not a correct one. The correct one is it shouldn't bother the person. They should be, on the contrary, should be happy that he has the models of perfection before him, so he could always he's always available to him to constantly be able to improve himself. The enjoyment should be in terms of partaking of that perfection, but not in a competitive sense. Competitive sense is destructive. It's a fine line. But the difference is clear. But that's really what, I would say, ultimately what takes away a person's happiness is the world of the relative and the world of the competitive. The person could live in his own reality, he could be infinitely happy. But most people can't. That's where the striving should be. The striving should be in that area. Striving should be in terms of the person evaluating himself and how much is he partaking of reality, how much is the other emotions he's trying to. That's the area that a person should be engaged in. When a person is a chote, so the chote stems from the person's distortion, his distortion of reality, but all the person needs is a little bit of reality to convince him that this is real, and that's the way it works. And when you have a society that supports certain ideas, he can't get beyond that, because since the society supports it, he thinks that proves that this is real. That's true. That's the difficulty. That's why only with chachma is it possible to break that down. With chachma, a person can see that the ideas of the society are completely distorted and corrupt, and it removes the influence that the society projects, which tends to give a reality to it. See, that's true. That's why limud is the only way that you could remove that. It's just like in Mitzrayim. What gave the Jews in Mitzrayim the courage to overcome the emotional effect of being a slave, which means that you're subordinated by another nation? The chachma. The Moshe Rabbeinu taught them. And once they saw the chachma, so then they saw that these people, they may have power over us, but in reality, they don't know what they're doing. They're shaping. They're idiots. How much respect can you have for a total fool? So the chachma is something which only chachma can break down. Fortunately, you're right in the sense that you're fighting a tremendous force in man. But there is another force in man. The other force in man is that a person recognizes down deep that the only thing that's real is chachma. It's an amazing thing. And no matter how prominent a person will be, no matter how much a person is placed on a pedestal, once you see that this person is a total fool, you can't have any respect for him. It's an interesting phenomenon. So, I know somebody that had respect for a certain individual because they were a very prominent figure, wealthy and well-known, and they met with the person and they saw that in matters of their personal life, they live like total idiots. So the whole respect is immediately gone. So chachma is something which is the only tool, the only device you can use, and there you're using a device which is part of the person, which is part of human nature. Human nature will never respect stupidity and ignorance. There's a part of man that respects chachma above all. It's an amazing thing. And therefore, you do have a tool on your side, powerful tool on your side. That tool is chachma. That's why Yadus places everything in that basket. Because a person by nature does recognize God. So therefore, no matter how much the emotions are going to pull, but there's another force, and the other force is the respect for Chokhmah. So you can't respect a person once you know that he's a foe. And that's why a person is an ally. That's the one ally that a person has. The intrinsic respect for Chokhmah that man has. Next mission is Tazayin. Kol avos yitluyu b'dovah. Yep. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I mean, Aristotle says that everybody will agree that a baby has the most enjoyable life. What do you say? So everybody will agree that a nursing baby has the most enjoyable existence. It's easily observable. You see, the baby has tremendous enjoyment, and then relaxes, goes to sleep. I mean, it's a fantastic, if you observe it, you can see that this baby, this infant, is living a very good life, okay? But nobody's jealous of the infant, you see? Because of the fact, Eve only said it when he was in the midst of his torment, so he was so tormented that he said he'll give everything up in order to go back to that time, because of the, in his life, he was going through a crucial state, so he had that reflection. But nobody in their right mind would want to go back to that stage, even though somebody could prove to them that was the most enjoyable experience. Because a person is tied to Chokhmah. As Aristotle says, nobody would want to be a child, even though a child, everybody agrees, has more enjoyment, pleasure. So as much as man is pleasure-driven, there still is something in him that tells him that he will not give up his knowledge and his Chokhmah, even if he could have greater enjoyment. It's an amazing phenomenon. Yeah, and that's the force that the Torah works with. That's really the soul. That's the soul of the soul of man. That's the man. That's the soul. There is another point that's important also, but I just want to give it some thought in terms of giving the proper presentation. It's an important component. I would say that there's two components. In this society, there's two things a person has to overcome. One is that the effect of the society and a false value in terms of the fantasies of the egoistic, that's one thing. But there's another component also. Kol ava shehi teluya b'davar. Any love which is contingent upon something, batl davar batla ava. Alright, that would seem to be a logical proposition. V'she'eina tluya b'davar, eina b'tela le'ola. Okay. Alright. Ezuhi ava tluya b'davar, zu avas amnon v'tama. V'she'eina tluya b'davar, zu avas davi v'yans. Alright, so first the Mishnah states the general principle. The general principle, which makes sense. If the love is contingent upon something, so the moment that object upon which it is contingent is removed, so the love is lost. And vice versa. If the love is intrinsic, so then then nothing can be lost. Okay? But then the Mishnah gives an example. What's the example? The example of Avot Tluya B'Davar is the love of Amnon for Tama. And one that's not Tluya B'Davar is the love of David for Yohanan, and Yohanan for David. Okay. So what has to be analyzed in this memra? In this one and the following one. Also, Komach Lech Shemayim Shemayim Sef Laskayim. V'she'inu Lech Shemayim Shemayim Sef Laskayim. But we'll get into these two memras are tied together, really. They're tied together. There's one idea, one underlying idea in both memras. But let's first just take it individually. So what is the, there are two problems. First problem is that the statement would seem to be self-understood. Self-understood. What's the chiddush? What's the chiddush? That's the major problem. What's the chiddush? Of course, it's totally the davar, so batul davar, batul avar. Because we know whenever you have a cause and you have a result, and the result is contingent upon the cause, so if you remove the cause, you remove the result. It's a simple logical premise. I mean, so what is the chiddush of the Mishnah? That's yeah. What is meant by Ava? But So the proposition is a simple one. What's why need for an elaboration on that? That's the basic question. The second point that you have to notice is the example. Why does it need for an example? The Mishnah gives an example. Okay. There's a third point that you have to. There's a third point really. First two points I put in one group. There's another thing that that's interesting about this memory. This is really avos. Avos means that this is ethics. So what does this have to do with what does it have to do with ethics? I mean, so it's bottle is bottle. This is very nice. So you tell me that there are types of love that are bottle and the types of love that go on. So fine. So what? And so who cares? I mean, what you want, if you want to study, it's a study of what is continuous and what is temporary. All right, but why does that belong here? Why does that belong in others? Do we relate to people in a temporary way? It doesn't say. It's an interesting thing. It doesn't say that there's something wrong with the. Sometimes you have to do that. What? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say there's something wrong with it. Well, there's something wrong with it. I mean, let's take the Avas Tamar and Amnon, okay? So, was there something wrong? Does the Torah say there's something wrong with that Ava? It's an interesting thing. It doesn't say there's anything wrong with it. What was wrong with Tamar and Amnon? Was there wrong? The Maisa was wrong. The Maisa was wrong. Because what did he do? I mean, Amnon loved Tamar. Tamar was his sister, but that wasn't the problem. It was his biological sister, but it wasn't really his halachic sister. So there was nothing wrong with him living with her. You don't find any criticism on the fact that he fell in love with her. No criticism. It's just that he lived with her without kedusha. That's what was wrong. It's interesting. According to the Rambam, it was an issue of the Raisa. According to the Rambam, he wasn't even ever an issue. Interesting. I mean, Midaraisa, wasn't ever an issue. But apparently, yes. I don't know when the Rabbanon of the Ramban, when the Rabbanon came about. I mean, whether it was before what? It could be it was before the times. So there's the Rabbanon. All right, whatever. I don't know. But anyways, what was wrong? So it was romantic love. It was romantic love. Is anyways until you find an Isser, the person to be involved in romantic love? So what is the point? I mean, he hated her afterwards for a reason. But it's not to say that every romantic love is going to be followed by hate. I mean, it's true, divorce is very high in this society, but it's not that high. Okay? And we know very well that this is basically a temporal, our existence is temporal. And there are many things that we're going to lose. So what does that mean? I shouldn't be involved in any ava that's probably the davar. The Mishnah doesn't even say that. It doesn't even say that you shouldn't be involved in an ava that's fully the davar. It just tells you a fact that butl davar, butl ava. Okay. It's not an ethical proposition. It would be an ethical proposition if you tell me that one should not be engaged in such a kind of a love. But you don't find such a thing. And you'll say that you're not supposed to use another person. I mean, I don't know if that's always true. I mean, if that's always true, that you can't use another person, is not necessarily true. I mean, if it's mutually beneficial, so what's wrong? What's wrong? I mean, a person is in business, so one is mispanis from the other. So mispanis is amizah. So one person uses the other gains by using him. Mutually beneficial. There's nothing wrong with it. What am I supposed to do? We're involved in a temporary existence. You have to be able to make use of things. If it's dishonest, that's something else. If dishonest use is wrong. But an honest gain, where I gain from another person, he gains from me, and we realize that there's a mutual benefit, so what? So this will become bottle, emosa mashiach, lola, and so on. I mean, we have to work now. The person has to work as an existence in a temporary. It's a funny kind of a memory. It's a funny kind of a memory. The memory doesn't seem to be an ethical memory. Yes. Anatli the Dover simply means that there is no ulterior motivation. There's no causative agent besides the person himself. Like the appreciation of the love between David and Yohanan was an appreciation of the personality. Each one appreciated the other one's personality, and an appreciation of the perfection of the person. So therefore, because if there's an appreciation of the personality, and the personality of the changes, so then the object is non-existent. The person dies. Also, they say that it'll become bottle. Yeah, that's true. But that's not the same kind of becoming bottle as the first one. In this case, there's an appreciation of an essence. As long as that essence is in existence, so the appreciation will always continue. But in the other case, even though the essence continues to exist, but the relationship to that essence is going to be changed. Okay? That's the difference between the two, from a logical standpoint. If the person dies, of course it is. You'll say that it will seem. You'd say, I'm just saying it's over. Say it's bottled because the thing is not existent anymore. But at least the love for the thing was intrinsically for that thing itself. So if Yohanan would have changed, so he wouldn't, but that would then Yohanan would be gone because that wouldn't be him anymore. Okay, we're talking about the essence of the person. That's the that's the plain shot. Okay, but what's the importance of this matter? Okay, when you take a look at the it's an interesting thing. The Rambam here is very funny because the Rambam says. Rashi learns that way. Rashi says, "Butl dover butl ava." Begun Amnon shelo ava stom elo l'shem niuf. Uchsev gedola sino asher sineya. He says on the first one, "Tliyav dover kol dover ava sheba olam, v'lo machmas kurva v'reyus." If it's kurva v'reyus, it means that it's a true appreciation of the personality. That's kurva reis. But in the other case, it's not because of a true appreciation of personality. It's some ulterior motive the person has. Okay. So, the question is, what is Pirkei Avos telling us here? What is wrong with it? Well, you take the second member also, you have that problem. Kol machlokes shehi l'shem shamayim is sofo l'skayim. So, first, you wonder, is that good or bad? I mean, Sofo l'skayim. You know what they say? The Derech Tzachos, they say. That Rav one time said, he says, a couple comes in and they say that they're having difficulties, they can't get along. So, okay, you can work it out. I mean, this person likes this, that person likes that. So, sit down and get together, you can work it out. But if it's, if the woman, for instance, isn't firm enough for the man, or the man isn't firm enough for the woman, it's a machlaik ishi l'shem shamayim, then you can't work it out. Seifel l'skayim. It's true. But anyways, that's not the pshat. The pshat is like this. The pshat is, what is it? So what if it's seifel l'skayim? What is the case of seifel l'skayim? So it says, machlaik ishi l'shem shamayim, zu machlaik ishi l'shamayim. Yishin l'shem shamayim, zu machlaik ishi l'shamayim. Aside from the problems in the memory that it seems to be a lot of machlaik ishi l'shem shamayim on the sky for a long time, you know, for centuries, which seem to defy the memory. But what do I care? I mean, what do I care? It's a funny kind of ethical criterion that it's sofo l'skayim or ain't sofo l'skayim, and so on. I mean, what are we studying? Sociological forces here. I mean, what does it have to do with perfection? So it will be l'skayim, it won't be l'skayim. This is a separate phenomenon that we have to study, but it's not a question of whether it's right or wrong. I mean, it's where does it fit into the ethical picture? Okay. Let's take a look at the... What really was... Take a look at the case of Tamar and Amnon. What was really the chait of Tamar and Amnon? What was the chait? So, he was in love with... Amnon was in love with Tamar. And that apparently there was nothing wrong with that. What was the chait? What was really... Where in lies the chait of Amnon? What was the fate? Okay? Anybody? Want to say whatever? What was the fate? Like I said before, the fate was not that he was in love with her. That was no fate. Because she was really mutaris. As a matter of fact, in the process, she said to him, You know the story. The story was that she, that he wanted to, we wanted, he was very depressed because he wanted to have her. And he had this, and he had this friend, Yonadav. And the Yonadav is Chacham Ma'ar. So he asked him, how come you're so down? So he told him, Stamachos of Shalom Ochi Ani Ohev. It was really his half sister. Was a sister from David, but not from the same mother. Okay, so he gave him an idea. He said, make believe that you're sick, and then he said that she has to come and tend to him, and then he told everybody to leave, and then he was alone with her, and then he lived with her. Okay, that was the story. But what was really the chait? The chait was one thing. The chait was not that he lived with her. But the chait was that he had to have her immediately. That was the chait. You see, if you look at the psukim, you see that's true. But the psukim say, "Vatagesh elov lecho." That's, by the way, that's when they made the gzera. That's when David Melech made the gzera that they can't be yichud with a pluya, because he told everybody to leave, and he was sick. They thought he was sick, and they left him alone with her. And then he committed the avera. So it says, "Vatagesh elov lecho vayachazek bo vayomalo." Bo yishichvi in yachosi. So he asked her to deliver. Vatamalo al ochi, al ta'ani, ki lo yeosachim v'Yisrael, al kase yasan avola hazos, v'ani ono oluches karpasu, v'ato tiye ka'achar anavolim v'Yisrael, v'ato daber no ala melech ki lo yim na'ini mimega. So what she said to him was, no, she said, don't do this now because this is not done in Yisrael. And this will be a terrible thing. It'll be a terrible shame. And you, she tried to convince her, says, you'll be one of, like, you'll be looked upon as one of the Nevalim. She said to him, and I'll be disgraced. She says, Daber no lamelech, ki lo yimei mimecha. So speak to the king, and the king will prevent us from having each other because of the fact that she was really, from the mother of Avshalom, was a Eshes HaFastor, and the, before the Geirus, she was pregnant with Tama. So therefore, she's not it's Geirus guy cutting Shinola Dami. So therefore, she wasn't really a sister from the mother. So it wouldn't be any Yisr. So that's what she said. Kilo yim na'ini mimeka. So it wouldn't be any halachic Yisr, and it wouldn't be any problem. It wasn't a problem of incest over there. It wasn't a problem of incest. It was biologically. It was from the same mother, but halachically there wouldn't be any problem. And apparently, it was a world at that time in which halacha prevailed, so nobody would look askance upon such a situation. And the melech himself wouldn't prevent us from getting married. I mean, it's an interesting thing. See, it was a world in which halacha reigned supreme, and as long as halachically there was no violation, there wouldn't be any problem. Okay. Wouldn't be today, though. But anyways. But the at any rate, what was the chait? The chait was that he had to have her right away, that moment. That was the chait. Interesting thing. The chait was that he had to have her right away. That was where the chait was.
Lust the
chait? What?
Lust.
No, lust doesn't say that the lust was a chait. It says daban alamah. Like there was another. That wasn't it. The chait was. The chait was that he couldn't wait. That was the chait. Okay. I'm trying to interpret. Okay. So yeah, he forced her. Why did he force her? Because he had to have her. He had to have her right away. So what does it mean? It means that he was overcome. You see? He was overcome. I mean, he was out of control. He was overcome by his by his desire. He was overcome by his desire. So what is that so odd? I mean, okay, so that happens to many people. But what is so, why is this such an example? What does it show? What does it demonstrate? What it demonstrates is one thing. You see, and Rashi makes a point of mentioning the fact that he hated her more. Afterwards, it says, "Vayisnoeh Amnon sina gedola ma'od, gedola asino asher sineo me'avo asher ahivo." Okay, that's why I'm going to throw her out. Okay, so that was another bad thing that he did because he threw her out, he shamed her, because the halacha is really, well, you see, the Torah says that that is a special thing, and an honest, so he's not allowed, Okay, so, because he has responsibility, has an ethical responsibility to keep it. Now, so what is the, what was underlying the fate? In every fate, there are two parts of a person that are involved. One part that's involved, of course, is the emotions. Emotions, lust. Without emotions, a person doesn't love that. Okay. Without emotions, a person cannot be a chavre. In any realm, can't be a chavre. And if you tell me, what about a person that's an apikeris? So it seems to be an intellectual crime. The answer is, the crime is not intellectual. The crime is, at the bottom, of it, it's always an emotion. That's why the Adonai says, I'm a novo belibo ain't elokim. A low lifer, a low person says that there's no God. It means that his conclusion is always to be traced to some kind of emotion. Some kind of emotion. If he was free of emotions and he was an honest investigator, he would never draw such a conclusion. So every chayt is always to be traced to the emotions. That's the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Levod Amar Menorah means the emotions. Okay. Now, so one part of chayt is always the emotions, but there's another part of chayt. The mind. Because a person has a mind, and the mind always has to be involved in every chayt. So there must be some kind of change in the person's thought processes in order for a person to be a chayt. What is the change? That's the question I want to ask. What is the change in the thought processes that cause a person to arrive at such a state? The state of unknown. That he must have her, and he has to have her immediately, right now. What is the state of the mind? What is the distortion that takes place in the part of the mind that's the Tzelem Elokim? Basically, but is the distortion over here in the Tzelem Elokim, in the Chachma? What kind of a mental state is that? What happens to the mind? What? The mind is probably fighting the idea that it's the good. But what does the mind say? Yes? There are a lot of things that can stop a person from doing a chait. Koes, a person has a kaisan, is not from Gehenna, Balgaifa, all these different things. But I want to know the underlying mental framework, the underlying idea, the most crucial one that is causing this person to be a chavre. What is the most crucial idea that goes on in his mind? What is
the benefit of the wrong idea?
That's true. I mean, it's true. Every time a person is a chote, he always thinks the benefit is going to outweigh the loss. Yeah, the gain is going to outweigh the loss. That's true. That's part of it. But I still don't think that's the underlying idea. There's one underlying idea here. That's even deeper than that. But a person's mind has to be active. Even in the midst of chayt, a person's mind is working. What? No one really thinks that the physical is the good. I don't think anybody. People know better than that. But what he's telling himself is the following. See, when a person is in a lustful state. That means that he's in a state of immense desire. Okay, he's in a state of immense desire. And when a person's in a state of desire, he realizes that he's lacking something. Now, there are two routes a person can take. One is to say that there's some defect in his personality. There's another route that a person can take, that a person usually takes. And that is that there's nothing wrong with him, you see, but the situation is what's lacking. In other words, he really could be immensely happy if only it's just that he needs this situation. This situation is the thing that's necessary to complement his existence, you see. It's not that there's a defect in his personality, that he lusts after something, that he's a lusting individual. If that was the case, so then he would act normally. He'd say, well, look, there's some defect in me, I'm a baltaiva, and I have to get over my taiva. There's something wrong with me. That person would not be a chote. When is a person a chote? When a person says, there's nothing wrong with my personality. What's wrong is, I need a certain situation. And this situation is the natural situation that I need for my happiness. And if I only had this situation, then I'd be really happy. So the defect, you see, the defect is not in myself, but the defect is in the situation. Once a person is convinced of that idea, then nothing is going to stop him. See, nothing's going to stop him. That was the idea of Amnon. That was the idea of Amnon. Amnon's idea was, his thought was, that there's just, my nature is such that this is what I need. If I have this, there's nothing wrong with me. If I have this situation, then I'll be eternally happy. It's a strange, whatever it is, then already okay, so there's halacha, there's this. That doesn't matter anymore, because it's a particular, I was created this way, I have this emotional makeup, I have this psyche, and in order for me, for my psyche to function, this is what I need. So now, everything you tell me, halacha, yeah, but halacha, general principles, these are general, but those are all very nice things. But the fact remains in reality, what's wrong is, there's nothing wrong with me. It's the situation, my nature is such, I'm constructed in such a way that I must have this thing. And if I have this thing, that's my nature, that's what I need. If that's what I need in reality, so then you can't fault me. Then all the arguments fall away. All the arguments. Once a person thinks that way, that idea, all the arguments are bottom of it. Okay? If a person thinks that, that I have to waste time, I have to be mevatel tayar. So, a person can say, look, it's a defect in my character, I have to work on it, why do I have to mevatel tayar? A person says, look, this is my nature, I must have this thing, I have to have this outlet. There's something which is, this outlet is necessary for my existence. Nothing will stop him once he has that conclusion, because that's it, that's him. Yeah, what's wrong? It's true, sometimes halacha depends on how strong the emotion is. If it's weaker, so first halacha, well, I'll have the outlet later, I'll postpone the gratification, whatever. But once it's really powerful, all the arguments are to no avail. Because the person is convinced that in terms of his existence, this is a necessary complement to his existence. Okay? Just like a person, and such a thing is true in a sense. Yadis does recognize that idea as being true. Where do you see that? Zachar, the pas, Zachar and Akeva Baron. Okay, what does he want to say? Chazal say. Ain't a person is a kol shari below Isha, is a shari below Simcha, shari below Tova. What does it mean? It means to say that a person by nature, lo tov heyos odom levado, means that Adam's nature was such that without Chava, he couldn't function. He couldn't function properly. That was never a taina against Adam. That wasn't even a taina against Adam. So you see that man by nature, there is some truth to that idea. Person isn't a chote when it comes to ideas that have no basis in reality. That's an idea that has no basis in reality. A person is not stupid. He realizes there's something wrong with him. Okay? The person has a neurosis, a psychosis, I mean, even he recognizes there's something crazy going on. He goes to see a psychiatrist. But when a person has an idea that's rooted in reality, that's where the distortion can take place very readily. And this idea that he had is even based on the idea of Zachar Nekeva Baram. That's what he was saying, basically. He was saying, man by nature can't be alone, and the Torah doesn't fault a person. You see that a person has certain requirements that are necessary for his existence, necessary for his psychological happiness, and this, in my case, this is what it is. You see? In my case, this is what it is, and once he had that idea, then everything is to no avail. Now, it's just a question of escaping the effects of the Nevala, okay, political problems. Halachic problems are very easily pushed aside once a person has that idea, because those are generalizations, and he is in a very specific situation. You see, that is really the underlying motive of chet. That's the underlying idea, the most significant idea. Okay, question. I mean, when does a person catch on? But people don't seem to catch on. Doesn't seem to work. People are always saying that it's this one thing I must have. And once I have this one thing, that's it. There's nothing wrong with me. It's the thing. The thing. Yes. There's one clue. How can a person tell whether he's under the influence of such an idea or not? There's one clue. Usually, perhaps always, this idea is accompanied by some kind of compulsion. Some kind of, has a compulsive quality. It usually attaches to, I must have this one. It becomes a particular attraction to a particular object. This is the thing. When it has a compulsive character, then it's, that is part of that underlying idea. Benefit takes a ring to be pretty sure that's what it is. It has a certain, if it's generic, if not specific, then it could be he's right. I mean, it could be he's right. I'm not saying, but once it takes on a specific object, certain compulsiveness, that's when you know the person is involved in a hate. That's where you see the distortion. So what is the person doing in such a situation? Yeah? We'll just go back in a second. That really shows you something about the society. So see, this society loves that idea. That this is the one and the only one of billions of people is the only one possible. You see? Because this society equates this emotion with happiness. That's the society we live in. This society, if it's not a compulsion, people feel that they're not really happy. Because they notice the most powerful emotions involve these compulsions. So therefore, they identify the compulsion with happiness. And they can't say, unless it's a compulsion, there can't be, there's something wrong. It's a lax. And it's force. You see, they assume that the force is what's going to give them the happiness. But that's not really, that's not true in reality. That's not true in reality. A person can be very happy, and he doesn't have to be under some kind of delusion that this is the one and only person in the world. Tell me a chazal that says, born young, cutting sticks of lard, Vasquez has a rest by pulling the pony. That's true. It means the Kodesh Baruch Hu is Mazavik Zvugim. But it doesn't necessarily, it's not the same, it doesn't mean the same thing. The question we have to ask is, you're saying that he mistreated her because she was begging him not to do this to her, and he was callous towards her feelings. But, well, the question we have to ask is like this. When a person is sincerely in love, okay, is he operating under one force or two forces? That's a good question. In other words, a person is sincerely in love with somebody, so do we say that he's operating under one force, which means love, by definition, means that he really loves the person, and therefore he wouldn't in any way hurt the person or do something wrong. Or do we say no, that the truth of the matter is he's operating under two forces. One force is he has an attraction to her and he wants the one that he loves. Without any kind of compromise, it doesn't really matter. But then there's another part of him which says, look, that's not decent, that's not right. We have to understand what it's a good question. It's a good psychological question. I mean, is a person operating under, when a person is in a marriage, so one person is decent to the other. Is the fact that the person is decent a compromise? Or is it an expression of the love? That's a good question. You know what I'm saying? Is it a compromise? Is it a nice kakira? Is it a compromise? That he really has such a love for the other person that he would never do anything to harm the other person. But there's one, it's a good question. How does the mind work? Well, how does the human mind working over here? There's one test you can put it with. That if a person, for instance, was if you're going to say that the love that the person has for the other person is really altruistic, what we call altruistic, then you'd find that a person would be willing to say, if somebody, a couple, is very happily married, then one partner would be willing to say, look, there's somebody else that I see that's much better for you, and I'm very happy to, we should really part ways, and because I want you to be very happy, happier than you are with me. They usually don't find such a phenomenon. Usually you don't find that. Should work both ways. Now we're bordering on two different types of love here, which is the romantic love is really a selfish kind of a love. And a person, and when people are romantically involved, the fact that they're nice to each other is really a compromise. is really not Mars. In other words, the romantic drive is really that they want the person. They're not going to say to the person, look, I found somebody that's better for you. The person that's courting, and a man's courting a woman, he's going to say, he's madly in love with her. He's going to say one day, look, I met somebody, I think he's much better for you. I'm going to step out because I love you so much. It's not really a, it sounds ridiculous because we know deep down that that's really not the nature of it. But the reason why a person is decent is because of the fact there's a confusion in the mind. You see, the confusion, love is a confusing idea. So he may believe, he may think he's doing it for her, but he will usually only do it for her where he still remains the main person. He wants more appreciation, or he can convince himself that it's so. But the truth of the matter is, in my opinion, it has to always be a compromise, unless it's a situation where the person would really be willing to step out. That's the ultimate test. But then you're dealing with a different kind of love, really. That's a different kind of love. It's confusing because the emotions are very close. But they're different. As a matter of fact, David HaMelech was the one that separated them. Because David HaMelech said, Nifla'aso avos choli me'avas nashon. So he said that his appreciation for Yehonasan was more wondrous than the love of women. What was the comparison? He was comparing romantic, the romantic love, which is the avas nashim, to the appreciation of another individual's greatness of character, greatness of soul. You see, and he said that this appreciation was more and more wondrous, more enjoyable to him than the other kind of romantic appreciation. He divided the two. But in a person's mind, usually a person doesn't divide the two, and it's also possible that both coexist. There's no contradiction. But the reason why many times a person is good, I'm not saying it's always a compromise. Let me clarify that point. I only mean it's a compromise if we're dealing with one to the exclusion of the other. A person can be romantically involved, and he can also have an appreciation of the other person's character. And both can coexist. When that happens, of course, if the person's decency can be a true one, because it's switching to the other kind of to the other system. You see, it's switching out of romantic love into the other kind of love. But the two are separate trends, but they can coexist. And many times, a person doesn't recognize which one he's operating under, because the person is not always in touch with the underlying forces and drives in his mind. But when I say it's a compromise, I mean it's a compromise when you're dealing strictly with the romantic. And the proof, of course, is like I said before, the person would never step out. See? But it's possible that a person should be involved with another individual on both planes. I mean, that's possible. In that case, it's altruistic. But the altruistic stems from the other kind of love, not from the romantic love, per se. Okay? Oh, well, that's what Gemara says, in the highest level, is fulfilled between man and wife. That's the Gemara. Getting back to the cases simply wouldn't fit in. Then again, I mean, the altruistic alone, that romantic love is not the altruistic alone, is pretty clear. I mean, from the fact that usually a young person won't be romantically, a young man won't be romantically involved with an 80-year-old woman. I mean, or simply the altruistic, then there wouldn't be any barrier of the physical. You see, the physical plays a role. So the physical always plays a role, and the physical is the romantic. Okay, I mean, it's important to know what you're talking about. Now, so let's get back to Amnon. So what was Amnon's fate? What was the fate of Amnon? The fate of Amnon was that he projected onto reality something which was really an internal thing. You understand what I mean? In other words, what he maintained was, it's not the fact that I have a problem dealing with my emotions, but that this Tama is really the object of my desire. And she is necessary for me. I must have her in order to exist. And it is a reality that I'm missing. Not that there was something within himself, some kind of emotion within himself that was projecting itself, taking as a direct object this other person, when in reality the person wasn't what he needed. You see? And that always is the case. When a person feels that he must have this thing. It usually is something else that he's looking for, but he projects onto reality what he's looking for. So that's it. So that's why there's a letdown. The letdown is being about letdown. For that's always, there's always a letdown. The letdown takes place because after the involvement, it turns out that it's not really the thing, and now he's back in business looking for another thing. You see? So the chait is the projection onto reality of something which is really internal. Okay? Something which is really internal. That was the chait of Amnon. Okay. Now you understand the mission. Now you understand the mission. The question, we asked the question to begin with. What's the chiddush of the mission? Kol ava shehi tluya b'davar. Is but lava. Well, of course, it's a logical proposition. You take away the cause and the effect is gone. But the Mishnah really is speaking not in terms of the mechanics. The Mishnah is speaking in terms of human nature. What the Mishnah is telling you is that oftentimes a person, what happens is that a person doesn't recognize the kaluya b'davar. That's the key. The key is that a person is blind to the kliya b'davar. That's where the perfection comes in. So kol avar shekliya b'davar, the proposition itself is not the chiddush. That's why the Mishnah says ezui avar shekliya b'davar zu avas Amnon and Tamar. Why? Because human nature is such that a person doesn't want to realize that they are defective. So they want to say the situation is defective. So they project onto the situation the reality which is existing in their mind. And once they do that, then they find themselves in a situation where they think it's really the thing. They don't think it. Amnon didn't think it was a toli b'davar. If Amnon would have recognized it was a toli b'davar, he never would have been a chotem. So the Mishnah is telling you that the difficulty in terms of perfection, one of the greatest difficulties in terms of perfection, is recognition of what is a toli b'davar and what is not a toli b'davar. That requires a great personality to be able to have that recognition, that cognizance, that awareness, and that discrimination. To be able to discriminate between when he's in a situation that it's a toli b'davar and a situation that's not a toli b'davar, because his mind is going to tell him always that it's something that is not a toli b'davar. You see? Okay. Right. Absolutely. But l'davar is through the acquisition. That's a very good point. It's through the acquisition. And then you understand, of course, what does Miki Dolos, like Rashi mentions, Ki Gedolah Sino Asher Sineya Meya Ava Asher Aheva. Why was the hatred so great? Because the moment he saw that this whole fantasy that he made of his mind is false, that this wasn't something that he needed. So then he abandoned her. Then what was left with? Was left with the guilt, with the Nevala. So she reminded him of his. Then he projected all his defects back onto her. And once he projected the defects onto her, the hatred was immense. Even greater than the Ava that he had before. It's an amazing thing. Even greater than the Ava. But that was also a chait. That was the second chait, by the way. The second chait was then she begged him. She said, look, don't throw me away. Then he's ruining me. He's told Nevala. At least apparently she was willing to live with him. So he was throwing her away. So the hatred was a second projection of his own guilt onto her. She's the chorus, and that was the full thing. Yes, Shlomo says about the mason, avosam, lesin osam, kvar avada. That a person lives in a world of avon sinna, where it's the objects, the people. I mean, that's the whole emotional life. That is the core of the whole person's existence. It's constantly involved with love objects and objects that he despises. But that's one side of the coin. That's avashi. That's the what it teaches you from avashi. He tluya b'dovah. But that's only one half of the Mishnah. Okay. The other half of the Mishnah is avashi ina tluya b'dovah. Continues. What's the Lashna Mishnah? Avo she'ina kliya b'davar is zu avas amnon v'tama. Avo she'ina kliya b'davar is eina b'teila l'olam. Eina b'teila l'olam. So apparently the Mishnah is trying to tell you two things. It's trying to teach you what defect is, but then it's telling you positive. Otherwise, it should have just said one half of the Mishnah. And this is all the Mishnah wanted to teach you. It should say one statement. Kol avo she'ina kliya b'davar, buckle b'davar, buckle avo. That would be the end of it.
But the Mishnah takes the other side of the coin. What is it teaching you on the other side of the coin? So what? So fine. So now I know that. What check that in the second part? Shana Kluyatova Ina Batela Liola. So what is it? So what if it's Ina Batela Liola? Of course, I mean that remains a logical proposition. Ina Batela, so what's the chiddush of that? What's the importance of that idea? It's an interesting thing. What's the importance of that idea? Just like the first idea is important, the second idea is important. What's the importance of that idea? Ina Batela Liola. It's an interesting thing. It says that's Avas David the Yohanneson. What does it mean? What kind of a thing is that? It means to say that there's a very unique kind of phenomena where a person can love another human being for the perfection that that human being embodies, expresses. You see, it's an amazing thing. It means that there is a kind of love like that that a person can experience. And that's why it says Nifla'aso Avos Cholim Avas Nashim. It meant that that is stronger. A stronger, he was comparing the emotion. Average person, of course, a boor wouldn't have such, can never have such an experience as David HaMelech. But what David HaMelech was saying was, he was on a very high level. And he said, that kind of emotion is more powerful than romantic love. Romantic love is the most powerful emotion. No, but there's another kind of emotion that David was saying was more powerful in his emotional life than the other one, than the romantic. And that was the appreciation of the perfection that another person embodies. And it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing. And that is a legitimate kind of, that the Torah endorses such an emotional expression. It's an interesting thing. The Torah endorses such an emotional expression. It's an interesting thing. The personality, becomes an object of love because the personality is perfected and represents ideas. It's an amazing thing. It's hard to explain such a thing, you see, but the Torah endorses that kind of love, even though it's, in a way, it's a love of a person. But it's a love of a right. That's a perfected love. Because it's a love of a person, but the love of the person is that the person sees the beauty of a perfected human being. It's very much tied into Avas Hashem. I mean, I don't think you can separate the two. Because it's Avas Hashem when he sees the beauty of a perfected individual that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. There's an attraction to that person, and there's a love for that person. Love for that person. You actually sense a love. Of course, it's only a person that's on a high level that can have that kind of an experience. A boor, an empty person, can have such an experience. That was the emotion. This was a more powerful emotion, even than romantic love, which is the most powerful emotion that everybody can realize. So, yeah. There's another case. There's a case that you have in the Navi that is similar. Where's the case in the Navi that's similar? In Rus, you have that thing. What happens? Interesting thing. It says, the Pasuk says, when Naomi lost everything, and she was ready to go back to Eretz Israel, so she was saying goodbye to her two daughters-in-law, and Orpah and Rus. So it says Vatisha Orpah Lachamosa Verus Dafkaba. So what does it mean? Vatisha Orpah Lachamosa, she loved her very much. It was a very close emotional relationship, emotional tie between those two people. There's no question, because she had to convince her to leave, go back, and apparently there was this very strong emotional, highest level of friendship and closeness, and love between the two people. But the love was simply based on the emotional, on identification, whatever you want to call it. I'm not interested in what the psychological causes, but it's an experience. It was an experience of a very close, the highest closeness of a friendship that you could have, you could experience. But when it came down to it, she saw that she has to leave. That's it. But Verus Dovkaba, what did it mean? It meant that she saw in Naomi something else. There was another kind of an attraction there. That there were ideas that she represented. There was something in the personality that partook of a different quality, and that's why she couldn't leave her go. That's why it was Dafkaba. That's why she couldn't leave her. It's an interesting thing. But all those years that they were together, apparently, she never wanted to be Megayim. Russ. They were together so many years. I mean, why did she suddenly woke up? It's an amazing thing. I mean, all those years she had not knew it. But now, of course, because I'll say that was Geras. Okay? But what does it mean? It means to say that sometimes in life a person doesn't come to the recognition of something which is brewing in their minds for years until they reach a crossroads. Because now was the time that she had to make up her mind to return or to go ahead. So then she saw before her eyes, one way is the life returned to the Elilim, to the Avodah Zarah, or here. And she couldn't do it. Then that which was she recognized all her life internally became actualized, and she went with nothing. See? That's the there you see again the concept that a person can be an object of love through the higher sphere. It's an interesting thing, and the truth of the matter is that that's what the Torah maintains. That really the attachment that a person has to perfection always begins with a person. Has to begin with a person. That's why you have a Mesorah. That's why you have a Mesorah. It's one of Avram Avinu. But the aside from Avram Avinu, the way a person is attracted to perfection is always an attachment that always begins with an attachment to a person. That's the way it works. Later, when the person develops, he becomes on his own in terms of the ideas. See, he can shed the attachment. He can shed the attachment, and he can stand on his own 2 feet in terms of the ideas. At the beginning is always the personality. It's amazing. That's why there's such a serious concept as Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem means where that personality that is attractive in terms of the ideas. Chil Hashem can't be done by just anybody. Chil Hashem, that's what Chazal say. The higher the person is, the greater Chil Hashem. So Chil Hashem means that a person who is attractive in terms of the ideas, if he does something to turn the person away from Yadus, he is destroying the world, because what he's doing is he is making it unavailable. He's making the system unavailable to the people. So that's why it's such a horrible error. That's why it's the worst error. But the beginnings is always with the person. That's the whole system. But eventually, the person stands on his own in terms of the ideas. But that is one thing. They may stand on his own, on their own in terms of the ideas, but there still is a different phenomena. What's the phenomena? The phenomena is an appreciation of the perfection of an individual. That's an amazing thing. That's what it means. That's why it says it is eino betela li'olam. It means it is never bucked.